Welcome to Lending Forward, a podcast where we're lending every bit of what we know to our listeners. From real conversations and lessons learned deep within the industry to education and forward thinking. Together, we're Lending Forward. And as always, don't forget to subscribe to our channels and connect with us on www.atlanticbay.com. Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group, LLC, NMLS number 72043, NMLSConsumerAccess.org is an equal opportunity lender located at 600 Lynn Haven Parkway, Suite 203, Virginia Beach, Virginia, 23452.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Lending Forward podcast. We're glad you're joining us today. This is Eliza Delgado, your host for this episode, and I've got with me two very special guests. We have Alberto Gomez, who is one of our mortgage bankers with Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group, and we also have Laura Arce, who is with us from Unitas US. So Alberto, I would love for you to introduce yourself, and then we'll pitch it over to you, Laura.
Thank you, Eliza. My name is Alberto Gomez. I am a producing branch manager with Atlantic Bay Mortgage. I'm based out of Annapolis, Maryland. I've been lending in the Hispanic community for 32 years now. I say lending, but I feel like I've been counseling more than lending.
And you, Laura?
Great. Well, hello, everyone. I'm Laura Arce. I'm Senior Vice President for Economic Initiatives at Unidos US, which is the country's largest Hispanic civil rights organization. I'm based in our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., but I'm originally from California. I grew up in the Bay Area in Oakland. It's a pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad you could join us today, and I'm so glad that we have two people joining us on this episode. It's atypical for us to have so many voices, but we thought this was a great opportunity to highlight some of the great work we're doing with our Hispanic communities and supporting them in their efforts to achieve the dream of home ownership, and that's what we're all about. So I wanted to jump off into a couple of, you know, just jump right into the deep end here. You know, we're talking about some of the things that you're doing with your work, and obviously we're passionate about making home ownership accessible to every community and making sure we're, you know, supporting them and providing resources to them. And holding their hands along the homeownership journey. So one of the things that we know you're passionate about and, you know, and work towards within your role and even just by virtue of your career is sharing your insights, because you've had a very, very impactful, you know, high level seat in the places that you've been able to serve. So can you talk to us about some of the insights of the challenges and opportunities that you've had in increasing, you know, Latino and Hispanic homeownership and what that looks like for you?
Yes, certainly. So, you know, that question, you know, I've been working in this space for over 20 years. And so, you know, we've gone through a, you know, a bit of the cycle, right? So that the answer to that question is always going to vary. But certainly in today's market, you know, the biggest challenge that we see right now in most parts of the country is the sort of intersection of inventory, the lack of inventory, particularly, you know, entry level starter homes, the first time home buyers, and affordability. You know, Latinos, you know, we're in every part of the country at this point, but there is a higher concentration of Latino population in a lot of really high cost markets, you know, places like California, Florida, New York. That's where a lot of Latinos live. And you combine that with the sectors that we tend to work in, you know, service sectors, construction, and so on, where the pay isn't always great. So you kind of have this comparison between median income of Latinos compared to the broader population in really high cost markets, you know, puts a lot of pressure. So that's kind of more of a, on the macro side. Yeah. Certainly, you know, in places where I see a lot of opportunity for enhancements and for movement that we can make is looking at more on the financial side, on the financing side. And so, you know, for Latinos, you know, we think about things like language access in the mortgage process. We think about streamlining the process for entrepreneurs. You know, Latinos have some of the highest entrepreneurship rates, and even being more accommodating for like multi-generational households. You know, Latinos are also the ethnic group most likely to live in a multi-generational household, and how all those things that, you know, for some folks may seem to add complexity, but it's really, you know, where I think the market needs to evolve in terms of serving this market. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there, because at the end of the day, you know, this is a business and we'll kind of accommodate where we see the market moving toward. But so those are some of the challenges that I see today.
So I love that. So Alberto, I know we talked a little bit about kind of Freddie Mac reports and kind of where the future of homeownership, you know, is going. And I know you had some really strong feelings about, you know, kind of what that looks like and how many Hispanics will be homeowners in the next, you know, 10 to 20 years. I know you had some thoughts to share and maybe a couple of questions to ask, so I'll pitch it over to you.
Thank you. So, Laura, I love that you mentioned multi-generational. And I wonder, what do you think about multi-units? And what I mean by that is, I remember literally 25 years ago where I did a loan for a gentleman and it was a 4-unit. And he rented out the other 3 units. Today, they still own that house. They bought it for, you know, let's say $250,000 in Tacoma Park, Maryland, so not far from DC. And it's a 4-unit, and now he has 2 of his daughters living in them, and they barely own anything. So I'm wondering, are there any thoughts on multi-units to help the multi-generational versus having one house that's all split up?
Yeah, so I love this topic for a couple of reasons. You know, one, just from the more kind of the macro point I made earlier about, you know, the high cost of housing today and the lack of inventory. I think just at a big picture level, we need to be looking more at higher density building of housing, kind of the more traditional, you know, subdivision with, you know, on a half acre detached single family house. I mean, we're not going to build in that same way to be able to get out of the deficit that we're currently in terms of inventory. But from the other, the flip side, so similarly, I actually went, my parents divorced when I was young. And when my mom, after the divorce, bought a house, she bought a duplex with my aunt. And that's how they were able to afford. And so we lived upstairs. My aunt and my uncle lived downstairs and made it affordable. And not only that, it was like we were with family. You know, my mom had after school babysitters built in. And so it was a win-win. And I think just the way we live. And I think in a lot of markets, I mean, you know, there's been a lot of talk in the press. You know, there was a recent article in the Wall Street Journal about the growth of accessory dwelling units, like in places like California. There's a big demand there. And then you think about markets like in Chicago, where I think there they call them not a duplexes and triplexes, but like the 2 flats and 3 flats, I think they're called there. Those are also really common in a lot of Latino neighborhoods. And it's a great way for families and communities to stay together and also make it affordable and build that wealth. And, you know, if you can have it as a rental, as an investment property, great. But like one of the things that we're seeing, you know, Latinos, we're having a positive change over time has been that we're increasing our educational attainment. So more and more Latinos are going to college, getting educated. And many times they want to come back after college and move back into the neighborhood where they grew up and be near family. And in many communities, that's not possible just because of the lack of inventory and affordability. So if you have these built-in structures where families can stay together, I think it's a win-win all around.
So Laura, with regard to that, and you mentioned this before and you alluded to, you know, kind of the challenge, but also the opportunity that we have in terms of like the financing side. So talk to me a little bit about how your role specifically in your organization is able to influence some of the pathways and how we can broaden the opportunity for, you know, Latino and Hispanic community to have access to these resources.
Yeah, so Unidos US, we are a national civil rights organization. You know, we've been around for 55 years. We're a multi-issue organization. So I have colleagues who focus on education, on workforce, on immigration, you know, health, and certainly housing, and specifically homeownership has been a core priority of ours since pretty early on in the early days of the organization. The way we go about our work, you know, kind of the levers or the capabilities that we have, you know, one is policy and advocacy. We're very active, you know, in Washington, D.C., where I'm based out of, as well as state capitals in a few of our priority states, specifically California, Arizona, Texas, and Florida. In addition to that, you know, we have a pretty big communications platform in terms of just having influence over the general public. You know, folks, you know, on Wall Street and the boards of large corporations. And then the other side is programs. We run various programs with our network of community-based organizations across the country. So all of that collectively, when I think about the way we influence change, it's really around systems change. So, you know, I'm not out there building houses. I'm not out there making mortgage loans. I leave all of that to the experts and the folks who know, you know, kind of what they're doing. But what I'm doing is I'm trying to create environments and change systems to enable more of this work. So when I talk about systems, talking about from the housing homeowners perspective, it's public policy and regulation. So you all know better than I do, the mortgage business is a highly regulated industry.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure that the rules that are very important for this business aren't interfering with, you know, responsible access to opportunity. And then on the other side is, you know, is what can we do to influence market practices? And so some of the things I mentioned earlier around, you know, better serving, you know, Latinos, and some of those might have some regulatory policy barriers, but some of them might just be, you know, helping to build understanding around where the market opportunities are for corporations and businesses. And, you know, one of the ways that we do that is through through research. And so, you know, kind of going deep and identifying what are some of the opportunities out there to compel change. So it's really about systems change to create a landscape that's friendly to increasing opportunities so that all of you can do the work that you do.
Yeah. Which, first of all, I'm just going to jump in real quick. We were, you know, obviously doing prep work for, you know, this episode together, and we're looking at, you know, kind of past things and items of conversation that have come up. And obviously, one of those things that came up was the lack of mortgage professionals to pursue, you know, serving the Hispanic population, either by virtue of not being proficient in the language or having the resources to serve that population, but also on the flip side, the amount of time it takes for a Hispanic or a Latino borrower to complete their applications, the amount of time and effort it takes to help them through the process and nurturing that. Obviously, Alberto could speak to this, and I know he's super passionate about it. So, Alberto, did you want to chime in on that? Or share any additional thoughts on that?
So before we got on, Laura and I got to talk a little bit about that, but I'll give you something that really, really, when I was doing a little bit of research, really surprised me. I knew it was long. I didn't realize it was this long. In an article in Housing Wire back in December 2022 that was called How to Reach the Growing Segment of Hispanic American Home Buyers in 2023. And something that it said was applying for a mortgage can be challenging for many Americans, and Spanish-speaking applicants are even more likely to find the process time-consuming and hard to understand. Of those surveyed, nearly a quarter, 24%, took 3 weeks or longer to fill out the mortgage application, and many ended up giving up altogether. So it goes right back to what you're talking about, your systems. And one of the systems, and I just don't see any other way around it right now, Laura, maybe artificial intelligence will help us with this, I'm not sure, other than come in, sit down, and do the one-on-one. But I know that you're a big fan of people first starting out with a nonprofit organization that can guide them through the steps. Now, here's my question to you, though. So Freddie Mac and the Urban Institute have forecasted that 7 out of every 10 first-time homebuyers from now till the year 2040 are forecasted to be Hispanics. What comes to your mind when you hear that?
So the first thing that comes to my mind is, I hope we're ready. You know, I think, you know, this is our time to really take a look at, you know, we think about the Latino segment. You know, it's a very important growing segment, but it's also diverse. It's nuanced. There's a lot to unpack when we talk about Latinos. You have folks who are recent immigrants. You have people, especially like in parts of New Mexico and Texas, who have been here since before New Mexico and Texas were part of the U.S., you know, and then you have, you know, different parts of the country. So I think we need to collectively really look at what are the challenges and opportunities to serve this market and make sure that we're serving it responsibly and serving it well. And, you know, to your earlier point, I think the one theme that I do think cuts across, you know, pretty much however you kind of unpack what it means to be Latino in the context of home buying is the importance of trust. And for me, this is a lot why I am a big advocate, and Unidos, we're big advocates of nonprofit housing counselors. You know, Latinos historically have not had a high homeownership rate, so it's less likely that we're going to have, you know, a mom or dad or uncle or aunt who have gone through the process who can kind of guide us through it. We're kind of out there. We're reliant on, you know, loan officers, realtors, and other professionals to help us. And there's there are a lot of realtors and loan officers out there who are going above and beyond, you know, to make sure that people are, you know, in the right product. But at the end of the day, too, like, I think it's really important for people to have, you know, unbiased information that centers them and what's best for them and, you know, in the long term. But I think trust is really a big important component. And to the earlier point that, you know, you made is the importance of diversity and representation in the industry. I mean, that's how we're going to get there.
Yeah. Alberto, did you want to keep going? Go for it.
I know that you're passionate, Laura, about home. Can you please tell us about the home initiative and the opportunities for creating pathways for #Latinos to achieve #homeownership?
Absolutely. So yeah, I'm really excited about this. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, Unidos US, we have been working in the space of advancing homeownership for about 25 years, and, you know, primarily through policy and advocacy, some programmatic work supporting housing council organizations. Earlier this summer, we launched this new initiative where we're really kind of doubling down our commitment to Latino home ownership. And it's the Home Ownership Means Equity, our home initiative. And we've set a really ambitious goal to influence systemic change to enable the creation of 4 million new Latino homeowners this decade. Which is really, it's a really big goal, but I really think it's achievable if we pull together cross-sector partnerships and really focus on what are those systems changes that need to happen. And so the Home Initiative, there are four parts of our strategy that we're focused on. One is around policy and advocacy. The second is around communications and storytelling. The third is research and building insights. And then the fourth is supporting place-based innovations. You know, a lot of the work we're doing is national, but at the end of the day, you know, as they say, real estate is local. And so we recognize that what's going to work in Chicago is going to be different from Los Angeles. That's going to be different from, you know, the Central Valley. And so we want to be respectful of what's working in different types of communities and elevate those solutions.
You know, Laura, it's so funny because you're talking and you hear, like, this is very macro. There's, you know, it's like moving the Titanic with, you know, your hands, just trying to, like, push it along. And it's a huge, heavy lift. And so I commend you and your team for doing everything that you can to widen this bridge of access for everyone. One of the things that Alberto and I were talking about was the NAREP State of Hispanic Homeownership Report from 2022. And, you know, they interview and they survey top producing real estate agents. And so this isn't always accurate to the loan officer perspective, but, you know, one of the things in their report was the 2022, you know, use of DPA was less than 10% of Latino and Hispanic homeowners accessed DPA. And so we're talking about, you know, the education and the confidence that people have to understand these programs, communicate them effectively, market them to these communities, and, you know, provide them as a resource for them to be able to leverage. Do you have any thoughts on that? Or are you guys addressing that in any particular way? Obviously, this would go hand in hand with what you're trying to do with widening that bridge of access. But that's a very tactical, you know, granular level, you know, thing that we could help move forward. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, down payment is, you know, one of, you know, it's not, I wouldn't call it the top obstacle for Latinos, but it's certainly in the top three. So down payment and closing costs are what you need, especially in some of these higher cost markets. So I think there are a few things there. One is we certainly need to build awareness. I mean, the thing that I, like, the more I'm in the space, like, it seems that almost every other day I'm learning about a new program. So there are a lot of really great programs out there, whether they're supported by the federal government or local state government, or even a lot of lenders or like a local city program or community program. So there are a lot of programs. And I think for a lot of individual consumers, it's really hard to navigate all of that. And so whether it's through the loan officer being knowledgeable or a real estate agent or a housing counselor, you know, helping the individual navigate that to understand, because, you know, there's sort of these layers of eligibility. Yeah. And some of it might be income, some of it might be geography, some of it might be, you know, combination, or there might be some other limits there. So I think there's a lot of work that we all can collectively do to build awareness and honestly just make it easier for people to plug in. I also think that there's a perception, and I'm not always sure sort of how, you know, with perceptions, sometimes there's a little bit of truth to it. But particularly in today's market, in a lot of places, you know, things move fast. And so if you find that house that you can afford, And, you know, it's like, you know, there's this perception that going through a program that might have requirements or additional applications is going to slow you down and you're not going to be as competitive. Maybe that's a little less true today than it was a couple of years ago, but I think in a lot of places that still is true. And again, it's like there's a perception, and I always feel like there's probably some truth to it, even if it's not 100% true 100% of the time. But I think it's something we need to at least acknowledge.
Yeah.
And is there a way that we all collectively can be better about how to plug in some of these programs so you don't kind of slow down the process?
Yeah. I also would echo that in terms of, you know, I think the importance of reinforcing the knowledge of your local lenders and people who know these programs that are available both from the municipal to the federal level. You really wouldn't get that from, you know, some of another competitor or another brand unless they really know your market and know what's available in your state or in your region. So Alberto, did you have any thoughts on that as well?
Laura, you're spot on. I can't tell you how many times when there's multiple contracts and one is like, let's just use for example, the Maryland Mortgage Program, which is a great product, and you have a conventional 20% down, you know, the sellers, I'm not sure who makes the decision, but it ends up going the route of the 20% down program because it's seen as easier or more guaranteed. But one thing, Laura, I like to bring up is on a local level, we have a lot of, you know, programs, Maryland Mortgage Program, we have this, we have that, we have all kinds of different programs. But there's one program on a national level that I think as an industry, we haven't done a great job in promoting. I know that I push it a lot when you talk Bay Bridge, Chesapeake Bay Bridge East, and northern Baltimore and south of where you are, and that's USDA. A lot of people don't realize that USDA has been doing, historically they did loans for people that were either residents or citizens. They've opened it up for people with work permits, and what I applaud them is that they did not lock down, say, this category, this category, this category. No, what they've done is they, you know, you go into the SAVE system, S-A-V-E, and you plug it all in. And it's a great opportunity for the Hispanic community to get into areas that are considered rural, but a lot of them, you wouldn't believe how close they really are. I wonder if you had any thoughts on how we can improve that message out to the public when it comes to programs like that, that are national. I mean, USDA is everywhere in the U.S.
Yeah, no, I love that you brought up USDA because you're right. I think, you know, we focus a lot on conventional and FHA lending, but the USDA program is really great. To your point, you know, it does have these very strict geographic restrictions, but, you know, I think I'm sometimes surprised by what's considered rural, and so I think it's kind of incumbent on all of us to, you know, plug in. And so I think, you know, a lot building the awareness there on the USDA program, because again, I think for a lot of folks, it's not the top of mind program, or depending on the market they serve, they just assume that it's not, you know, eligible or doesn't apply, isn't applicable in the community where they serve. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for building awareness. And, you know, a lot of these, you know, these federal programs in general, they don't have, you know, funding or a lot of resources to do promotions and marketing. But I do almost wonder if there's a way to partner with them, like on some kind of public service type campaign to build some of that awareness. Especially right now, the USDA program with the lower rates and the lower down payments is a really, could really make the difference between someone being able to, you know, enter into home ownership or have to wait until the market shifts.
Okay, great. Anything else on that, Alberto?
I can bring up something else.
Yeah, go for it.
So, Laura, recently on a Comcast Newsmakers episode that you were on, you were interviewed, you mentioned the foreclosure crisis of the last decade, where many Latinos lost their homes to foreclosure. That whole time was very painful for me to watch what was happening. And we could have all kinds of conversations about that. But you mentioned that in the last 8 years, there has been a steady recovery in Latino home ownership, and that Latinos have been the only demographic group to see consistent annual growth in their home ownership rate. Can you tell us what you are seeing that is driving this?
Yeah, so, you know, I was at the Federal Housing Finance Agency during those foreclosure years. So I would get the numbers, and it was really sad because leading up to the foreclosure crisis, we were seeing this big growth in, you know, in improvements around closing the homeownership gap, particularly for communities of color. And the foreclosure hit, and it seemed like these communities were like the first in line to, you know, make that loss. And, you know, and I think a lot about Latinos in particular and the work that I do and like surveys that we've done. It's clear that the Latino community generally as a whole, and of course there's always exceptions, but generally our community really values homeownership. Like it's like the first goal when we come to this country, it's sort of that marker of success, that marker of we're here, we've arrived, and now we're secure. We have our home, we have a place for family to gather. And on the positive side, that makes us really, we're willing to like work hard, tell us what we need to do to achieve homeownership, and we'll do it and we'll get there. On the flip side, I believe that sometimes makes us vulnerable to, you know, predatory actors, to others. And so, you know, so that just a little bit of kind of what I think kind of played out, particularly with the Latino community. But that passion and that drive for homeownership, even though like all that bad stuff happened, it's still there. And so once families begun to recover, you started seeing that growth. And I do want to, you know, acknowledge, you know, you mentioned NAHREP earlier in their State of the Hispanic Homeownership Report. That's from, you know, data from their most recent report as well. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, the economic recovery and just really prioritizing homeownership. As soon as we've come back, started saving money again and being, you know, able to buy a house, that's what we prioritize. And so that's, you know, that's where you see the positive, consistent growth. And we're the only ethnic group to see that consistent increase in homeownership all those years. And I think it just demonstrates the value that our community places on homeownership.
So along those lines, you know, referring to, you know, your time at the FHFA and, you know, some of the lessons that you learned during the time, is there anything that, you know, in addition to what you've just mentioned, that you've carried forward that was a critical learning with regard to, you know, some of the mortgage servicing policies and some of those things that obviously you were in the trenches on and have carried forward into your career now?
Yeah, I think, you know, a really big and simple one that many of us collectively learned is, you know, if we want to help people, you have to make it easy. You can't sort of, you know, kind of build in all this bureaucracy. I think in the early days of some of the foreclosure prevention programs, there was a lot of concern about fraud, and there were all of these attestations and documents and forms people had to sign, and then we didn't have the systems in place. And so, you know, people kind of got, you know, lost in the process, and it was overly complex, and people lost trust and confidence, you know, in the system. Where at the end of the day, I mean, there were a lot of audits and reviews done. The incidence of fraud was tiny. I mean, the bottom line is these are families who wanted to do what they needed to do to keep their house and keep their family together. And if we are honest and sincere about wanting to help families, whether it's avoid foreclosure and turn to homeownership, you gotta eliminate the friction, the unnecessary friction and the unnecessary bureaucracy. Yeah. And just and give people a clear path forward. And again, like if you kind of just show them the way, if that's their goal, they'll follow you, whether that's going to be they need to do some fixing up of their savings or credit in 3 months or whether it's going to take them 3 years. Just show them the way and they'll do it and they'll get there.
Yeah. It's so funny because my parents are also immigrants. And so, you know, my whole family is in another country. So I understand, you know, how, you know, people who are living in a whole different culture, a whole different set of rules, it's intimidating to take those steps, especially with regards to what your credit could look like, how much money you need, all these signed documents. You could be signing your life away. Nobody knows unless that trust factor is there. So that's such an important point to keep reinforcing is without the trust, even for general population, without the trust, we really don't have a business because we're in the people business. So
exactly.
It's a great point to reinforce. You know, with all that being said, I think there's some important initiatives that we're obviously, you know, talking about today and things that we want to make sure that we're getting across. Is there anything in addition to what we've covered today that you want to make sure that we're sharing or that we can continue to promote on your behalf or anything that you would find is, you know, kind of your next 3 to 5 year mission specifically that you want to crystallize in kind of this conversation?
Yeah, so I would maybe kind of reshare a couple of things.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned, you know, I talked a little bit about Unidos US earlier. I would direct people to our website, unidosus.org. On there, you can search for our affiliates and also search for housing counselors. So depending on what market you're in, if you're interested in just meeting organizations that are, you know, providing housing counseling or education in that local market, you should be able to link up geographically with folks there. Also on our website, unidosus.org/homeownership, is a page focused on the home initiative that I mentioned earlier. And in the coming months, we're going to be adding some tabs that includes additional work that we're doing. So we're doing a lot of work around research, and we'll be posting, you know, our findings and the data that we have. We'll be posting it there on the website in the months to come. So that's where I would refer people to learn more.
I love that. And with our last couple of questions, the first one being, I always want to ask, you know, when we have guests on the podcast, like if you were to inspire the next generation or hand off a baton or give them some encouragement on, you know, what some future endeavors could look like for them, you know, what advice would you give to the future mortgage professionals or real estate professionals that want to serve these minority communities? What would you want them to start working on now as they start their careers?
Yeah, so I think, you know, when you're starting out, I think it's really great to follow your passion. Like, what is it that you're good at and that really kind of grabs your interest? So are you more of a numbers person? Are you more of like a people communications person? And just really, you know, build on that and figure out how that specific skill can really help someone. So for example, if you're really good at like the forms and the numbers, maybe you volunteer, you know, at like a free tax prep site and, you know, you're helping people, but there's something about sitting across the table with someone and really helping them with their specific situation. You're going to learn a lot for yourself through that process. It's going to help your career down the road. So that's, you know, I would just, you know, kind of see what you're good at and kind of continue to build on it while also helping someone.
Laura, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I do that at a place in Easton, Maryland that serves, it's a multicultural resource center. It's the Chesapeake Multicultural Resource Center. They help with things like immigration, health. They call me for housing. You mentioned your website. What does an organization, a nonprofit organization, need to do to be approved by Unidos US to give housing counseling?
So we're a HUD approved intermediary. So the first big thing is making sure that you meet the HUD certifications, which does require some training as well as, you know, an exam, and you have to kind of maintain that accreditation over time. And so any of our affiliates, and there are about 50 of our 300 affiliates that are HUD certified, mm-hmm, to provide housing counseling. And so they're, you know, it's HUD, so they're pretty strict on what their criteria and their requirements are. And so we follow that very closely.
Great.
Awesome.
Let me run some quick numbers at you.
Okay.
62 million Latinos live and work in the United States. I got these from your website, so you know these numbers. $2.7 trillion to the economy. According to the 2019 U.S. Census, 80% are U.S. citizens. That's almost 50 million Latino Americans.
Mm-hmm.
My question, Lara, is, in your opinion, give me your top three things that we do to help all of us combine the path to home ownership, because it's like you said, it's not a house to us, it's our home.
Yeah. So how, like, we or how the Latino community helps?
Everybody.
Collectively.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the big thing that comes to mind, just the economy. So we know that housing is a really important component of our nation's GDP, our economy. So like when the housing market goes, that's often where the broader economy is going also. And for the Latino community, we're increasingly, I mean, this actually crosses sectors, but we're an increasing share of the workforce. You know, our community has the highest workforce participation rate. We're, you know, rapidly increasing our educational attainment, you know, college degrees in the community. So more and more our economy, including the housing market, is going to be dependent and reliant on how well Latinos are doing. So I like to say that, you know, advancing Latino homeownership is not only good for Latino families and Latino community, but it's good for our economy. And I think it's something we all should care about, even if we're not in the business of making loans, or even if we're not an advocate for the Latino community, it behooves all of us to support Latino homeownership, because it's going to be a big part of the strength of this country economically going forward.
Lara, one thing that I'm seeing that just really amazes me is how many employers really want to help their Latino employees become a part of the community by having a home. It's amazing once they get those roots in, and you know they stay at their job longer, they stay in the area. So housing is incredibly important, and I applaud the work you guys are doing.
Thank you.
Awesome. All right. Well, Laura, with our last question here, I want to say thank you for joining us on this episode. Thank you, Alberto, for being with me. I wanted to ask the last question, which is, how are you lending it forward?
Yeah, so I'm a big believer in building the bench and helping the next generation. You know, I've never been someone who subscribed to the bootstrap, you know, metaphor. I got to where I am because of the hard work of my grandparents and my parents and all the mentors and managers I've had through my career, you know, that have helped me grow. And so for me, it's really important to, you know, recognize young leaders who, you know, just sometimes want advice or need a little bit of direction. And so that's something that I really prioritize to make sure that I'm making time for helping the next generation of leaders, you know, in this industry.
Awesome. And we thank you for it. And I'm sure the people who have been able to be in your space with you and that have been mentored by you, I'm sure they appreciate it also. So with that being said, I wanted to say thank you guys again for joining us on this episode of Lending Forward, and we will see you on the next one.
Thanks again for listening to the Lending Forward podcast powered by Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group. Don't forget to tune in next week and make sure you subscribe to our channel. Remember, we all play a part in lending forward. So go lend something forward today.